The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Dose of Leadership Podcast, episode 183.
Welcome to another episode of the Dose of Leadership Podcast, the show that brings you inspiring and educational interviews with today's most relevant and motivating leaders. Each episode is dedicated to highlight real-life leadership and influence experts who dedicate their lives to the pursuit of the truth, common sense, and courageous leadership. And now, here's your host, Richard Ryerson.
Hey, welcome to the show. Richard Ryerson here. Thanks so much for tuning in. I really do appreciate your support. Please make sure you're telling your friends, your family, your coworkers all about this show. Keep this community growing. I appreciate your support. We're continually rising in the iTunes rankings, and I couldn't do it without your support. If you haven't done so, please go to iTunes, subscribe, rate, and review, and let the world know what you think about this show. Again, thank you so much for your support. I want to introduce to you my new partners to the show, 99 Designs. You know, they've been so great with me and helping me with my design of my business. You know, it's all about selection, speed, and creativity. These are just a few benefits of having several designers work for you and helping you on your project. So if you want to start your next design project, I encourage you to go to 99designs.com/leadership and get a $99 power pack of services absolutely free. Well, I'm absolutely thrilled to have on the show today Stephanie Rodriguez. She's the Chief Enabling Officer and founder of Mighty Media Group, a bespoke digital and disruptive communication consulting firm. She's a mother, speaker, digital futurist, and Latina based in Australia. Stephanie's a prolific live streamer and a self-professed Twitter addict. I love that introduction. Stephanie, welcome to the Dose of Leadership Podcast.
Thank you, Richard. I'm really thrilled to be here.
You know, I this is like my fifth interview with people that are in Australia. So thank God for Skype, because I don't know how else we would do this. It's 5:10 p.m., 8:10 a.m. the next day in where you're at. But guys, technology is amazing, isn't it?
You're preaching to the converted there for sure.
That's right, because you're all about this technology and what's going on. So tell me a little bit about, you know, your name, Mighty Media Group. I love the way that kind of rolls off the tongue. What's the name all about? What is it all about?
Well, when I came back to Australia, I was in the U.S. in the bubble. So, you know, a little bit about my history. I came to Australia first in 1997. For romance and to have this whirlwind marriage, and married an Aussie and came down from Los Angeles. And during the bubble, I was recruited by CMGI, who owned Alta Vista at the time, to work inside the internet bubble with them. And we all know how that ended. Our share price went from like $97 to $3 in 11 months. And
wow.
They said, thank you for playing. And I came back with a title and a print project out of Miami, where I was based, called Ocean Drive Magazine. And we licensed Ocean Drive and published Australia's first lifestyle magazine, which I thank God for, because it gave me a real introduction to content and understanding the value of good storytelling. But I was always passionate about digital, and when I handed Ocean Drive back to its parent group in about 2004, I had a whole bunch of opportunities, and I needed to come up with a name. And Mighty Mouse, the cartoon character, was very much a part of my childhood.
Yes.
And looking at the icon, and I don't know if you've seen our logo online, Richard, but that M that's in our logo is very much the same
M that
he wears on his chest.
Right. That's right.
But it's become not only just a symbol of our kind of our myths and legends as a business, but, you know, Mighty Mouse, he was courageous and he was a hero because he never knew his size. You know, he went into battle and he never knew he was small.
That's right. Yeah.
And that's kind of the novelty of the cartoon, but it's been the same approach that we as a business have taken to what we do. We've worked with multi-billion-dollar companies globally, being from Australia, being really small. And some people, you know, are amazed that we have the history and lineage as a company, the clients that we do. And I always say it's just because we never knew we were a mouse. And that kind of that novelty of Mighty Mouse and that legend stays with us and is very much a part, I think, of our corporate story, but also a part of our ethics and our DNA as a business.
What is the passion? Specifically, coming from your background, is it a passion for marketing? Is it a passion for connecting? I think you said storytelling. What is it? What is the driver for you?
Well, I think it's a little bit of a hybrid of everything, really. I've always been kind of a geek girl, and not geek girl on the side of being a coder or even taking any coding lessons in university, but I was an early adopter, and I had a Palm Pilot before they were cool, and one of the first touch Motorola phones that were with a stylus. I mean, if there was something that was going to collate information and make life easier, I wanted to have it, and I wanted to play with it, and I wanted to hack at it and introduce it to others. So with that, just we call ourselves digital natives, and that transcends an age bracket, and it's more about kind of a culture shift. So in coming from a traditional marketing background before there was technology, before the internet, like pre-1995, if you right. would, coming from that marketing background, but then looking at opportunities and seeing early the potential that the internet was going to create, the way it would change our lives. I remember when I came to Australia and I met a young kid who was about 18 years old, and he was still in university, and he could write code and I could sell it. So I said, let's get together.
Right.
And he and I built some of the Australian government's very first websites, like 1.0 in 1997 and 98. So looking at still being in this vein, it's just amazing where we've come. But it's also to see how, disruptive technology, and that's everything from, iBeacons to tablets, is changing the way we tell stories. It's
yes.
changing the way we share. It's changing the way governments operate. It's changing the way our children are educating, the way in which our mind processes information. So, I see our role as a business, but my role as a business person, as a conduit for change. Much of our practice is about transformation versus any technical build or we need an app or whatever. We always start with kind of the why.
Oh,
and what
that.
Are you trying to achieve, and create solutions around that. But at the very core of that is transformation. And I've just been really always passionate that digital will change the world.
Well, and I don't think there's any better time in the history of the planet where, anybody with a desire for transformation, a desire to making an impact, to do something great in this world, anybody can do it these days. Even more so, I mean, look back at 1995, I would even imagine that maybe you're even surprised of where it's at today, or are you? I don't know. How do you look at that now?
Well, working for CMGI at the time, CMGI was incredibly successful with Alta Vista, giving birth or the rise to Google and other search engines that came along after. But the side of the business that I was working in, business development in Latin America, was pretty much making a land grab for every. We were talking about wireless, but it was called WAP, WAP, in 2000. So now being 2014, CMGI was investing in this technology or wanting it, or we were discussing it at, big corporate sit downs and stuff. So it wasn't, a Star Trek idea for me, but I think, it's certainly emerging faster. And it's quite funny because I tell most of our clients, in consultancy, if you need a case study for why you need to adopt digital in your business right now, forget about it. Because by the time you get someone to prove it first, you're already six steps behind.
Yeah, you're way behind.
Because it's evolving much faster. We're seeing a trend which is being referred to as leapfrogging. And that's where some companies have, been so stuck in the lag that their customers are – not going for what is next, but they're actually going in front of that next. So if it's about a website that should be responsive design, because now consumers are engaging with it on mobile, you know, they're still trying to make their website configure, and actually their group have moved on and now they're on social, or now they're using direct messaging technology, etc. So it's kind of how fast is it going, and where do you invest, and how far do you plan? And I tell my customers, like, max 2 years.
Yeah.
Know that anything you do, if you can't do it quick enough, in 2 years it's going to be obsolete. So if you got to scale, and you got to think about what we don't know. So versus getting really married into our, you know, 5-year big plans, some of that you can do, but really now you can't.
Yeah.
You could say, I want to be alive and pay taxes in 5 years, but everything else is subject to change.
Yeah. Well, so is the future... And gosh, I can see the companies that I've worked with, and even some that I've coached, and they're using some of these old legacy. They're not brick and mortar, but I call them brick and mortar software solutions, where they're just so archaic. And is software as a solution in terms of how do I say this? The simplicity, you know, kind of the. Oh, you know, the campfires of the world, you know what I'm talking about? You know, the ones where you're using just absolute simplicity. It's not about building. What's the philosophy I'm looking for? It's almost like you know you're not building a product that tries to do everything. It's almost like your minimalist approach to everything. Is mm-hmm. that kind of the future of everything, or is that where you see where it's going?
Well, I mean, I think it depends on use case. We always want better features and benefits of certain things. And you know, I read a great book called Rework. Have you read that?
Yes,
book
I have.
Rework?
Yeah.
Know what I'm talking about. Yep. But you know, the guys there talk about it about their software, and they talk about how they tell customers, no, we're not going to add that feature.
Yeah.
If you want that, buy somewhere else. We're really good at this. We manage our costs and it does what it does. And no, in other instances, and I know even with me as a software as a service customer for some of the tools we use in the agency, every year when they want to up their price, I ask the question, well, why should I pay more? And if they don't have a valid argument, I challenge it and go, well, why are you going to raise my prices if I know that you're not actually improving this technology that's already built? So if you're not going to add a bell or a whistle, then why should you raise my price? And it, then it comes into value creation. But I do see that, you know, unlike the old days when things were so much more expensive, open source has changed the way we live and work.
Right.
Now, there's very few bits of code that haven't already been written that you can't go find and plug in. And WordPress is a really good example of, you know, open source at its very best, and it's very basic. It's so easy that non-technical people can go and add a form to their website or a banner or whatever it is that they want to do with no heavy lifting, pretty much. And it's also super cheap. So our barriers to entry, if you would, or barriers to success on expansion or modernization is almost a moot point now, because it's not hard to convert. And there's a portability of our data that didn't used to be this way, too. Now we can export everything in a CSV and take it wherever we want and put it in the cloud. So,
right.
You know, the idea of data, the idea of complexity is you are right to a point, is simplifying down into, you know, key features and what our expectations are and our use cases.
You know, one of the mindset, especially, you know, looking at Rework, and one thing that relates to, and I'm in the flight test community, and it's very, as you can imagine, trying to certify an airplane is very bureaucratic in a lot of ways. It's old school, right?
And but I'm glad you do it, because I fly so much. So
right.
You keep testing them and making sure they're good, because I'm on them every single week.
But the thing that, in from a business standpoint, the thing that frustrates me is, and this is any business, not just it, but it's, and I resonate with this whole idea of, like, I'd rather build, and I'm paraphrasing what they say in Rework, but I'd rather you build half a product, you know, of getting it out there and answering kind of the why and the purpose, instead of building a half-assed product that's trying to solve mm-hmm. everything too late, right? Mm-hmm. And so is that kind of the mindset that you guys subscribe to? I mean, is that, from what you see, is that what kind of works? The companies that are kind of making it happen now, are they kind of, and like you said, you only got 2 years, because if you get too bureaucratic and too slow with it, you're going to just get surpassed.
Yeah, well, you know, looking at who our clients are, and again, we work, my agency's really almost niched by accident, not because we aimed this way. It just, I think it fits my personality and lifestyle, so that's why we're there. But we work a lot with travel and things related to the traveler's experience. So that might be duty-free, that might be airport restaurants, that might be airports themselves, that might be travel and tourism companies. So I have a really fun bunch of customers, but in looking at their global footprints, they are like dinosaurs, and not for their age, but for their size.
Yeah,
you know, they're not easy animals to move, and it's difficult for them to embrace change, because most of the leaders in those companies, this is a leadership discussion, but if we take it back to the culture of the business, those leaders themselves are not digital natives. They're not open to change. We are still, you know, buying technology because we bought Lotus Notes in the 90s, and we should still use that, you know. And so it's really funny to have to be the change agent for, you know, C-suites such as the ones that I work with, or marketers or technologists, et cetera, inside these businesses, to be the kind of the shepherd and say, look, you have to go down this path. You know, Brian Solis, he said it very well a couple of years ago with his book, you know, it is engage or die, evolve or perish. And you look at those, you know, existing companies that were blue chip and in our hearts and minds, like Kodak, et cetera, you know, where did they go wrong?
Yeah, right.
What happened? And when they refused to innovate, when they dug in and said, nope, we're not going to change, they lost out. So it's, you know, it is a harsh reality almost, that there's not a real option to staying exactly where we are. So I typically would throw the question on the table during these challenging meetings to say, well, folks, let's look at the cost of inaction. What happens if we do exactly nothing and do exactly what we're doing today? And, you know, that's my definition personally of stupidity, like do the same thing and expect a different outcome.
Right.
It's not going to be different. And we're fortunate because we've earned the trust in our industry that people do turn to us for guidance. And whilst they might go down the path kicking and screaming, they go because they look at the option, which is to be obsolete or irrelevant to their customers and audience, or to be superseded by a competitor who's moved faster. And those are two very sobering concepts for big business, but it's never an easy or painless discussion.
Hey, halfway through the show, I want to take some time out to talk about my partners, 99 Designs. You know, branding is a huge deal. I've learned a lot about it over the last 20 months, and we talk about branding a lot when you're in the business community and the entrepreneurship game. It's a term that gets thrown around by all types of people, and you may be wondering, hey, what is the big deal all about? What is branding anyway? In a nutshell, your brand is the set of perceptions people have about your company. It's an emotional expression of your value that your audience creates. If you want to become a leader in your space, design is key in communicating your brand. And when customers have seemingly endless choices in this noisy world, design becomes crucial in helping you stand out and giving you that competitive edge. But what options are available to people like us who are bootstrapping it with little to spend on design? Many have turned to online marketplaces like 99 Designs, like I have, to help build their brand on a budget. You get maximum creativity with 99 Designs contest model, where they get dozens of designers to compete to deliver you your best design. You get to be involved in the process too and walk away with a logo, a website, or other design that truly represents who you are and your brand. I've used 99 Designs, and I love what they did for me. Visit 99designs.com/leadership and get a $99 power pack of services absolutely free today. So looking back at your career and where you're at now, and when you got into this business, I mean, how much of it now, I mean, I can see that you're just so busy with helping people find their purpose, their why. How intentional are you about your leadership and specifically the role that you're in now?
Well, you know, you have to look at what we do, and I keep reflecting back to, you know, how we live and how we behave. And anyone who spends any amount of time with me, you know, knows that not only am I deeply passionate about what I do, but also, you know, what I do takes a lot of courage, because you have to be brave to go to perhaps, you know, one, I'm a female, so being a female and a CEO and a founder of a successful, you know, consulting company, but to sit across from men who are more learned, who are also male, who are also older, and challenge their beliefs takes a certain amount of inner kind of calm to be able to explain that and to be brave in places that others are not comfortable or confident to go. You know, these works of transformation in business take, it's an erosion of kind of conformed ideas or business practice or, you know, fear. In many instances, it's about removing fear from others. And that's where I guess I would answer yes, Richard, it is kind of purposeful. You know, the leadership position that I take, you know, in the way in which we help our clients.
Yeah.
And it is a bit on purpose. I spend a lot of time learning, and I think, you know, coming from that a humble position of learning, and I help others to learn. It's not just to change, but it's also to understand kind of the why, like why is it important and what is the impact of this and what will it mean for us if we evolve, if we grow. And in the teaching process, you know, it is about storytelling. You asked me that question as well a bit earlier, because, you know, marketing is in truth storytelling. That is innately how we learn. People, you know, wrote scrolls, people drew pictures on caves. You know, it's all about the narrative, and this is a part of our story, which is now, both as a planet and also as people and also as businesses and employers and employees and, you know, stakeholders. But we look at, you know, the impact of what we're doing, what we're creating, you know, into the future for our children, for the environment. And it's, you know, it's a pretty big puzzle to solve.
Well, yeah. Are you, what I'm sensing from you, are you a practitioner or a student of human nature?
Absolutely. You know, I call myself a social anthropologist because there is a lot of observation and learning. And learning, marketing is part psychology. So we do look at people's behavior, people's attitudes. The internet and the ability to listen is really powerful. And I think a lot of people underrate it or they're just ignorant to it.
Right.
And whilst, you know, social media has created a place where so many people are talking, it's very easy to listen for the sentiment of things that you would never otherwise know. And now, because so many people are speaking in open places, open forums, things like Twitter, you can learn what's going on in people's heads, because not only are they thinking it, they're also saying it. So, you know, the ability to observe human nature and sentiment, especially online, is really, you know, it's a game changer, because you can pivot, you can make corrections, you can improve, you can take into consideration, you can develop empathy. And that's, I think, really powerful, you know, for leaders today to look at, you know, what are people saying and what's on their mind and how do we adapt that or use that information?
Yeah, I would argue that what you just articulated there, that really, if you're really interested in a leadership position and you want to set yourself apart and not just be mediocre and really kind of, again, set yourself apart as a true leader, is do what you just said, is understand, listen, the empathy piece. I mean, those are all, to me, I think I don't even know if it's a new thing, but I think that's something that all great leaders throughout history have been really good at. I mean, you know, you can be a decent manager, but if you want to be an exceptional leader, I think you gotta have that emotional intelligence, right? I mean, you've got to be passionate about seeing how people work, I think.
Yeah, the listening bit, somebody said to me as a child growing up in Virginia, they said, you know, God gave you two ears and one mouth. Why do you think that is? And it's, you know, I've never forgotten that. Mm-hmm. But I think it is purposeful that, you know, by listening, we can absorb. But by doing. So the other flip side of leadership is not just listening, but by doing, you know, and really that resonating from our behavior, but our attitudes, you know, people learn, remember how you make them feel. So some of it is about being a sponge and absorbing that, but also what you resonate about it and how you address that as an individual also is a part of the leadership piece, that empathy, that understanding. And, you know, in the transformation process, again, the space that we live and work in, you know, that's very much a part of, you know, our our workflow and understanding, because, you know, changing the way we do things is not always easy for people. Sure. And to lead and to teach, but also to deliver, impart some of that passion to them, them to see it or feel, drink the Kool-Aid or feel the vibe, whatever you want to say. But for us, that's very much not just about lip service, but about, you know, true grit and true passion. And, you know, and that's for me, how I want to live and the legacy I want to leave.
Yeah, no, I love it. I can sense your passion from it. I can sense your, you know, you're wanting to do something of significance. And I think that is really at the heart of leadership. And, you know, we can say marketing, but I mean, really what you're doing, it's everything you just described there. I mean, those are all leadership skills that could benefit us all. How do you deal, going back to the fear piece and overcoming kind of, you know, I can just picture myself in that position. And we've all kind of been there where we're in that role where people, as you put it, are more learned than you. And I'm sure, as we all do, you're faced with self-doubt, and I'm sure that you've dealt with it, and obviously you've dealt with it successfully. How do you kind of fight what I call the resistance dragon that always crops up when you want to try to do something significant? How do you slay that dragon?
I don't know that I have a single sword or a single trick per se. I do know, though, that if someone turns to me for advice, they have obviously decided that I can help them. So it's my innate responsibility to step up to the plate.
Obligation,
and deliver.
Yeah.
And it's just not negotiable. Like, and you know, I walk into some board meetings with going, oh dear, you know,
right.
And you know, and having to, you know, tell people things that they don't want to hear, or that their system is going to be obsolete in 5 years. And they say, well, do you have a computer science degree? No. Do you have an MBA? No. How do you know? And to be able to stand firm in our experience, in our observation, in our knowledge, etc., is about, you know, understanding that I'm here for a reason, and that's why you've turned to me, and just going in and swinging. You know, we lose all of the battles we never fight. So I just remind myself that we lose absolutely every single battle we don't fight.
Yeah, and I love how you said that. It's not ego or being egotistical or trying to, you know, walk in there with some sort of cocky attitude. It's about being authentic and remind you that you do what you said. I think what I heard you say is that I do matter here. I'm, you know, I do have something to say. I am worthy of some sort of value. I don't know.
I think you have to earn it in some ways. And,
sure.
And I work with a lot of millennials, and they're hilarious because they have this kind of self-entitlement that's very funny.
Right.
And they would have absolutely 5 days in a row and think they're brilliant. You just go, yeah, you know what? I hired you because you have enormous potential, but let's take this one day at a time. And it's a really funny thing. But I think, you know, at my age, and also with the number of years that I've had in working with this industry and staying the course, you know, and it's difficult to see and work in emerging technology and disruptive technology and be a futurist, to say, I know what's coming and I can't necessarily articulate it, but I can tell you it will not be the same today, is about this kind of, you know, youthful approach to transformation, to process, to evolution, if you would. And it's understanding that we will never be exactly in this moment again. And we can only prepare on how we will cope with change. And that's a really kind of, you know, that's a hard concept for some. But the millennials really believe that in the instant, it's all there for them. And it's, for me, I find it quite remarkable about, you know, earning that right to succeed and earning that right to be a leader, you know, comes from being worthy, being deserving, and also, you know, being humble.
Yeah. Well, I like that.
It is with the humility that we approach it all.
That's right. There's a lot to be said about a quiet confidence there's tremendous power in that. You know, it's kind of the Jim Collins level 5 leadership, you know, humility faced with an intensity of will, you know, and that's level 5 leadership. That's what we should be striving for.
I so agree.
So is it all about revenue? I mean, this industry fascinates me without trying to get too geeked out, because I'm a geek at heart too. I was a computer science major. I love all this stuff. I do believe.
I'm so jealous.
I mean, so there's always a part of me, you know, I consider myself an entrepreneur, a wantrepreneur, a solopreneur, whatever you want to call it. But and I've never really dove down the software as a solution path. But there seems to be a calling for me, because it seems like that where there's so much potential, and not only in revenue for an entrepreneur, but changing the world and making a positive impact. What do you think about when I say that?
Well, I listen to a lot of people talk, and somebody said in a conference I was at in 2009, they said, you know, find a need and fill it. Right. That's the best thing you can do, is find what the world needs and go build it. You know, unless you can significantly improve something that already exists, then that's your purpose. And we look at, you know, one is the fact that we're consultants, you know, on how we can improve businesses. But there got to a point in this process where I said, it's really great that I'm creating new revenue streams for my clients, but it's unfortunate that I don't sit on the backside of that, that I can
right.
retire off of that.
Right.
And, you know, from that belief or that opportunity is now creating, you know, ways in which we are developing our own internal products and internal opportunities, and again, productizing some of what we do so that more people have access to it. It's scalable, and you know, we can monetize our IP, and that didn't come immediately. Mighty Media Group turns 10 this year, so it took me 10 years to get there. But my goodness, when the light went on, it was very powerful. So I do think, you know, and you look at so many, I'm an information product addict. I've never admitted that. So Richard, it's just a moment you and I are having, but I get 10,000 emails, no word of a lie. I've got 45,000 unopened emails in my inbox right now.
Oh my Lord.
But most of them would be trying to sell me an information product.
Right.
Because I have a very thirsty mind, and I love like little software that let you do this or make this widget.
Sure.
And I'm addicted to them. Like, I don't buy dresses online, I buy software.
Right. Yeah. I can relate. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, you know, looking at that, if there was a need that you could fill. And it's very funny, because in my consulting, you know, I talk with people and I meet people, and I say that to them, in an offline world, every single person has something that other people would pay for. And, and to what degree? I had dinner on Saturday night with a horse trainer and his wife, and we were talking about my business and his business. And I said to him, Nick, you know, think about what people come to you and what knowledge you know that you could sell while you're sleeping. And he's like, well, I'm a horse trainer. And I said, but don't people call you and ask you how to buy a racehorse? And he said, yes. And I said, well, think about that. All you would need to do is look at Google keywords and find out how many people searched how to buy a racehorse. And if you had the answer, because you've won X number of derbies and horse races with your animals, could you give advice in a single capsule, purchasable online or through iTunes for $2.99, whatever, you know, that you could sell while you're asleep? And he was like, I never thought of that.
Yeah.
So, you know, the internet creates a means for which we can impart our wisdom and spread it. And the information marketplace, GigOM did a study, and I read it in about 2012, and I've never forgotten it. And, you know, the study concluded that the digital goods business was sitting at about $14 billion, but would escalate in 2014 to being about $36 billion worth of digital goods. So the question is, you know, how much of that, Richard, is going to come out of your pocket? You know,
right, exactly.
How much is going to go into your pocket, and how much of that wallet do you want?
Yeah.
And that's really the opportunity that's there, that's never been there before in this global digital marketplace, which is very exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting. I mean, and I see it, and obviously I'm in the middle of it trying to do exactly that. I'd like to get a little chunk of that $36 billion, and I have a little bit. But I got to tell you, it's even, you know, for a entrepreneur like myself, it can be daunting and overwhelming sometimes, because like, it seems like there's so much to do. And you watch and you see and you're like, well, should I be, you know, doing Google Space ads, Facebook ads? Should I be doing, you know, the Jeff Walker's, you know, sideways sales letter, all these other things? And it can just get so overwhelming sometimes. And I guess that's why we have people like you, right?
Yeah, well, I guess. I mean, you know, it's really amazing that Nick this horse trainer, you know, was a little bit reluctant at first. He was like, really? I said, I don't know what the demand is, but that possibility is certainly there. And how long would it take you to sit down and just explain, you know, what it is that you do or what you would advise someone naturally? You could do it with a voice recorder in the car. So it's not necessarily about, you know, writing War and Peace and having a PhD in teaching to be able to explain, you know, what is his IP. And I said, in every person, there is some IP about something. Planting tomatoes, you know, buying wine, whatever it is, mm-hmm. that can now be productized. And some of, we do help people do that if it's scalable and we believe in the product.
Sure.
But, you know, ultimately, you know, the internet and digital creates so much of an opportunity for the way we communicate, the way we behave, you know, the way we share and the way we lead.
Yeah, that's it's a great time for sure.
Mm.
What who are your heroes?
My heroes. Well, I come from the, you know, the 80s and 90s in my education. And, you know, Zig Ziglar is probably The Secrets of Closing the Sale was one of my first business books that I ever bought. And I just found him remarkable with his simplicity.
Yeah.
And that book, and I don't consider myself a salesperson, although I probably sell a lot. because I just... You know, it's I'm not directly trying to push a product on anyone. You know, I'm trying to illuminate their opportunity. And so how I see sales is perhaps a bit skewed. But, you know, the ability to be, you know, honest and help people to understand opportunity was something that I just thought he crystallized. And it's never – that knowledge has never left me. But then I look at kind of my modern day heroes and people who I highly – regard. And, you know, Brian Solis for his thought leadership. Mm. I just think he's brilliant.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of his. Don Tapscott, who's a bit in the older generation, but, you know, Don's written a million books, including Wiccanomics and Macroeconomics. You know, Don is a futurist ahead of his time because if you look at how old he is, you know, he wasn't a digital native, but he has a philosophy of surrounding himself with youthful ideas. So he does a significant amount of mentoring, you know, and he works with universities and colleges, and I just think he's brilliant for that. And I, you know, I had the benefit of meeting him and having dinner with him once, and it was just incredible, you know. So
that's,
yeah,
great.
Don's pretty special, and, you know, all those traditional wonderful change agents like Nelson Mandela. But, you know, looking at people who've directly impacted the way I think and lead and train, you know, I would tend to probably say that, you know, Brian and Don have had a significant impact in the way I think. And there's one more who I just adore and just highly regard as well and rate very high. It's a guy by the name of Gabe Zickerman.
Never heard of that.
Well, because he sits at the other side of the digital divide, and he's on the gaming side. And he has written several books and leads a lot of workshops around gamification and the behavior of online and the behavior of people and how we use technology to motivate them and using fun to motivate people, but understanding how the mechanics of digital and processes we ask people to do and complete can be improved using the science and mechanics of gaming. And he's done a talk at the Google headquarters a couple of years ago. It's on YouTube. Highly recommend it. It's 45 minutes. Very funny.
What is his name? What's his name again?
Gabe, G-A-B-E, Zickerman, Z-I-C-H-M-A-N-N.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, in those same veins, this is kind of a fun question. If you had, you had a whole night to plan the ultimate dinner party, you're hosting the dinner party, and if you had five people that you just would could invite, they could be living or dead, and you could invite into this party, who would they be?
I would invite Malcolm Gladwell.
Ooh, yeah, good one.
I'd invite Seth Godin.
Oh yeah, good one.
I'd invite Gary Vaynerchuk just because he's loud and would make an awesome dinner guest.
Right.
Who else? It's three. I get five guests.
Yep, two more.
Tricky.
Got Gary.
Kevin Roberts. Yeah. Do you know who he is?
No. Maybe
Kevin
I do.
Kevin Roberts is the founder of Saatchi and Saatchi Advertising. Like, he's one of the leaders of Saatchi and Saatchi Advertising. And he wrote a book called Love Marks that I read about 5 or 6 years ago on how to build a remarkable brand. And probably Steve Jobs.
Ah.
I'd be the only girl at the party, but I'd have a heck of a time.
No, but man, what a conversation. What, that would be a crazy, interesting evening.
Hmm.
Wouldn't it? Gary Vee, Seth Godin.
Who's your first? We mix it up between marketing, we mix it up yeah. between people and social behavior, a bit of technology and innovation, you know. So I think, yeah, it would be
fun dinner. Wow. Mm-hmm. I love asking that question. It's just so much fun. It's right. It is tricky. People always pause. They get to three and they find out, who's the other two? And it can get a little difficult. But no, that's a great
list. Then you're having to filter out. Like, there's the obvious top three that you just go, yeah, that'd be really fun. And then it's like, oh, who else could you invite? Yeah. But Kevin Roberts is a really remarkable man. He's still alive, so he's not dead. But he's based in New York. And his books have been a part of my nurturing and education, and someone I greatly admire. So
yeah, Saatchi and Saatchi. Is that how you say that? Saatchi and Saatchi?
Yeah.
I'm looking at him right now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Gosh, you're just such a fabulous, passionate, engaging conversationalist. I love talking to you about all this stuff. This is you're a leader in your own right, and it's just not that there was any doubt that you deserve what it is, but I mean, you're just a fascinating conversationalist. I'm just so thrilled to have you come on the show.
Oh, thanks, Richard. I'm really honored to be interviewed and to participate, and it's great chatting with you too.
How can people get in touch with you? I mean, you got Mighty Media World. I'll have links to all this, but how else do you want people to connect with you? I mean, you've got 45,000 open emails. It might be kind of tough.
Well, I mean, one is that I'm on Twitter, so my Twitter username is digitalgoddess with 1D.
I love it.
But if you search Digital Goddess, even on LinkedIn with 1D, you'll come to me. So I kind of own that footprint across the internet of the Digital Goddess with 1D. So I'm pretty easy to find. I'm also my name, Stephanie Rodriguez, with no A's. Note that, because otherwise it doesn't find me.
Right.
And you'll find a very prolific fiction writer named Stephanie Rodriguez that's not me.
Yeah.
But Stephanie Rodriguez at Gmail is pretty easy and direct.
Well, very good. I'll have links to all this. My gosh, thanks for coming on the show. There's so much more we could talk about. Maybe we'll
couple do it months, again.
We'll find a specific topic and we'll talk about it. There's so much more to explore with you. But gosh, what a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
All right, we'll talk soon.
Richard invites you to become a part of the Dose of Leadership community. Visit doseofleadership.com and sign up to receive his free Common Sense Leadership ebook, a guide that highlights how all of us can learn to become calm, confident, consistent, and courageous in all aspects of our lives. Richard is also available as a speaker for your next event. Richard specializes in practical leadership and change management. He has a philosophy of inspiring everyone to think and act like a leader, which is based on timeless natural principles and common sense. You can get more info by visiting doseofleadership.com.